to live.
I find that I'm unpleasantly
breathing.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome once again. My guests are Scrump and Evelyn. Today we're going to be talking about patronage in British politics and in even British online politics, possibly. But before we get there, I'll remind people to pick up a course at the Academic Agency, Trivia and the Bestseller, buy it now. Where can people find you guys?
You can find us on the YouTube channel Scrump Monkey, or you can buy the anti-politics book over at Wefflings Publishing, and you can buy a very nice book.
It's a good book. We recommend the book. You've just missed a sale on the book, but do buy the book.
Oh, I should have said in the other one, given that it's happened today and I'm not entirely sure when these go up. R.I.P. John Virgo. You will be missed.
The snooker legend you're talking about.
Yes.
Okay, I was not expecting that one up my Twitter this morning. So, he was only doing the Masters the other bloody week.
Yeah, he was.
So, patronage. Lots of people don't like it when we get into this topic, but I find that quite fun. So where do you want to start?
I think maybe it's worth, before we get into some of the examples and some of maybe the more ridiculous aspects of it, fundamentally discussing the importance of patronage and what role it serves in helping to build an organised minority.
Yes.
That first and foremost, being a political activist in any way, shape or form is not a viable career. Whether you are an online influencer, or you do it in person at protests, or you run it as part of a charity or a fundraiser, there is money coming from somewhere else that goes into that. Now, obviously, there's the rare exception when it comes to influencers, but you are well aware yourself the amount of brand diversifying you've had to engage in to make that work and be somewhat sustainable. And even then, we consider this probably the exception to the rule. So, from this, we need to conclude the fact that, for a first off, you cannot fund your own business, fund your own movement as you build it. It is not a business that returns a profit which you can accrue and then grow from there. That doesn't work. Ergo, any effective political action is going to require a foundation of money, and probably quite a large one at that, or at least access to liquid money in a very short-term sort of manner. If you don't have that, why would you bother engaging in politics in the first place?
That is also why when we ask people who's funding them, we're not being cruel and paranoid. We're asking a genuine question, because unless you are somebody who has, like you have, a long-standing built platform, which, by the way, limits the activism in quotes you could do. You couldn't do what Atomic... You couldn't go around getting Performance of the Arrested all day. You've got streams to do. You know, you've got bills to pay. So it really does.
I'm just a scholar, humble scholar. Yes. I've never been a political activist.
No, you're a scholar and entertainer, basically, is what you are. But that and that. Well,
I'm a clown. I amuse you.
Yeah. but outside of that, it is very difficult for people to be any kind of professional political activist. So when you see people moving towards that, you have to wonder, where is their patronage coming from? And it's something that people should keep in mind, is that people are getting their money from somewhere. You are seeing somebody for a reason. And so the discussion of patronage is very vital, because the most people seem to default in their everyday lives to the bottom-up view of politics, and that they think people are just standing up for what they believe in. And a lot of people will be like, well, who's behind you? It's like, well, nobody. That's why we can't do a huge amount. Evelyn's kind of slightly behind me, but that's because she's slightly taller. But we don't really have many means. We provide commentary and we make a little bit off stuff like the book. And that's a good area where you can organize. And that's kind of like a good mutual patronage model. But apart from that, we don't really have a teat to suckle from. Hence why you don't see us on GB News.
Yeah, well, let's not beat about the bush. The book's being, I think, what you can only really describe for what scale we operate on, a quite strong commercial success. It's not money you could live on, tell you that.
No, we've done okay with it, but it's supplementary.
It then starts to beg more questions. If you are seeing an individual who says that you're independent activist journalist, or they're a presenter on whatever platform, or they're a reporter for whatever news outlet, you then have to question, who are they getting this money from? And what strings are attached to it. Because there's absolutely no way anyone that's smart enough to be engaged in anything with that sort of money lying around is just going to give it away for free. Even if it's only petty stuff that they're asking for, they're asking for something. And at that point, you are locked into a sort of cycle whereby you're constantly being asked to do things, no matter how big or how small, for sums of money that you need to maintain the lifestyle that you have. Especially if you're at a conference in Brussels on Friday, and then you've got a domestic party conference in Britain on the Monday. Oh, and there's a Reforms doing an announcement on Thursday, I've got to be there. Where are you getting the money for all this travelling? You need to be there to report on these events, of course. So how is this all maintained? What do people maybe sacrifice or give up that they would otherwise be doing if they had that money independently?
Good question. So are you saying that basically all the people that you see is gobshites for hire on various different talking head shows are part of some patronage network or other?
Oh, sometimes quite visibly, you'll see many of them work with think tanks. Some of them just take dark money. There's been a lot of dark money scandals in America and the UK. There's a lot of stuff in the UK as well where you just see that they are straight up members of like the IEA, you know, the Institute for Economic Affairs, or they get shuffled around into places like Reason in the US. There's a lot of transatlantic travel now with a lot of these think tankoids, and a lot of them either are already think tankoids or become think tankoids in short order. But part of our work is pointing out how obvious many of these patronage networks are. When you look at structures like, you know, all the stuff related to the Tory party, you can create a whole CV from that. We refer to that as the manufacturer experts. But it's very hard to communicate that to people because they go, you're just jealous that they got a job at this media outfit. Well, this media outfit is just a front directly for the Tory party. There's only one degree of separation, you know. Unheard and all that being set up by Tim Montgomery and Paul Marshall, the Tory activists. It's all that kind of thing. And yes, being published in Unheard is grounds for a funny look. It's like, well, how? Who do you know and why? Because that's a publication for the people who are adjacent to think tanks which are adjacent to the UK security state. And we're writing another book, and a part of that is about the pipeline, the direct pipeline between up here, which is just MI5, and down here, which is your lowest rent kind of think tank person with a side podcast. The patronage goes all the way down, and not just tangentially or tenuously, very visibly. It's some of these people have to send in invoices to some places, which means there's a paper trail. And it's just the fact that nobody really looks or cares. It's the fact that it's so sewn up and it's so many people and it goes so low down that people go, oh no, they wouldn't bother paying this person. My favorite example of that happened in America, the network known as Progressive Victory, which was Brianna Wu, if you remember. No one remembers Brianna Wu. But she ended up paying crumb tubers, leftist bread tubers with like under 10,000 subscribers, under 5,000 Twitch followers. And they were being paid directly by the DNC. They bother to pay people that small directly. And there's just, like, that's not conjecture. One of them had a meltdown and was demanding money off them. That's how we know. But...
And it's a very insidious pattern of capturing people. It's a way of creating, for want of a better word, assets. You take these people who, most of the time, I think are just completely naive. Though in the few times I've actually managed to discuss directly with what I would refer to as some of the base sprogs about the possible risks or dangers of being involved in the networks they are and being reliant on them in the way that they are, they all seem to have no understanding whatsoever that this is a possibility. That at some point, okay, maybe you are just innocently a pundit for GB News or Talk TV or whatever it is, but maybe at some point you get a tap on the shoulder from someone who does actually run something that's one degree away from the 77th Brigade, at which point you are basically being contracted by like the Home Office and all sorts of people of major disrepute so that you can maintain the nice rented flat you've got in London and go on like four holidays a year and whatever else. And that when these people work out that they are actually assets and that they are just somebody's whipping boy, it's not very easy to get out of that.
So basically what you're saying is that it's impossible to really get involved in politics at any grassroots level because it's already sewn up by some paymaster.
No, people need to have patience.
Yes.
People need to build proper foundations. Yes. There needs to be something of a permanence and a lasting aspect. We don't need a political party. We need something like we talked about years ago, like the Carlyle Foundation or Institute, whatever I was going to call it at the time, which was just a way of saying, look, collect all our money, all our resources in somewhere permanent so it lasts and it stays, and that we can turn around to people in future and go, look, we want you to write this book. We want you to be engaged in this project. Here's money for the next 5 years, and there will be no strings attached.
The problem is that a lot of people want to subsume themselves in existing organisations. Our contention is that all the existing visible organisations are completely sewn up, and we really need to start somewhere that's more like a bake sale to fix the church roof. Mm. But when you pitch someone a bake sale to fix the church roof, when they want some sort of delusion of right wing, you know, tanks on Whitehall and all the completely nonsensical civil war stuff that people talk about, they're like, oh, why are you pitching that? It's like, well, the church roof will get fixed. We at least the church roof will get fixed, and that's become our conception of politics, is that, well, you need to do small things first, and most people don't have the patience to do small things. They'd rather join a think tank, and then, you know, they might get a couple of appearances in LBC, and they think they're changing the world and moving the Overton window, when really they've not fixed anything, not even the church roof.
You don't even have to join a think tank now. You just confirm psychologically manipulative narratives on Twitter for monetization, and you scream about patriots rising up every other day, and the inevitability of civil war, and keep people in a sort of war state of mind, and you get thrown money for that. Yeah, why not?
One question I've got is, okay, so we know that there are these money men. Usually you can tell when someone's part of one of these networks. They're generally around that little country in the Middle East. You know, they have to be compliant, or they have to push certain talking points. Why is it that there is so few... Now, everybody talks about the base billionaires and so on. Why are there so few rich people willing to fund anything kind of genuine? Why is it always already sewn up by
the kind of permanent... Because they get ripped off by all the other guys repeatedly. Yeah. A lot of the people who fund these things are genuine, but they're funding the only games in town. A lot of rich people, in quotes, a lot of billionaires, see politics in a less complex way than you do, and are less initiated about who's who. And many of them are frankly frustrated because they've tried to throw money at a based world, and all they've ended up with is the Reform Party. There'll be a lot of people who have put large sums into Reform quite quietly who are apoplectic at their choices for their pretend shadow cabinet, but they're not really able to say much publicly because, one, they don't have direct control, and, two, they'd admit throwing good money after bad. So many of these people, and I've met them, and a lot of them are quite likely to support you, but they've been ripped off by 15 different, effectively right-wing scams run by the intelligence services.
The four or five people who are, you know, fund managers for Policy Exchange so that they can best allocate their money in a year are going to make a lot more clever decision about who they pick up and what they give funds to than Lord such-and-such, who's just a bit wibbly and, like, slightly older version of Boris Johnson. As you say, they don't have the acumen to actually work out what's going on. The other circumstance is that the zone's flooded. There is so much small money flying around for certain individuals that it's easy to get them to do anything. I'll just go straight into an example from Twitter the other week. There was one Montgomery Toms, who started some new youth vertical come news aggregator come split off from Turning Point UK. He put up a post about launching this, and within a matter of hours he was given half the goal required, so he was given £1,000 by John and Irina Mappin, like that. Now, let's be honest, we can probably presume that was pre-agreed, and that using these give, send, go sort of methods is just a way to move this stuff around and make it look more organic. But then you look into who John and Irina Mappin are. They're nutters. Yeah, they're Scientologists that live in some art house castle come hotel in Camelot who believe that Charlie Kirk was a time traveller and that they discussed this with him at several occasions on their trips to Jerusalem. Then it turns out Mr. Toms then takes that money, sits outside a university outside of London, and then manages to get his mate and almost himself arrested because they get harassed by some leftist. Why should that money even be going into that? Is it just to create a circular economy of lawfare and drama headlines that these people can then go and boost their career with an LBC or somewhere else? It almost appears as if there is the high end where people make a living, and then there's the lower end where there's just sort of £1,000, £2,000 here and there is chucked to people to make basically incentivize them to go and make awful mistakes.
A lot of what we do is turn to people and go, excuse me, why are you funded by a Scientologist? Why are you funded by portions of the UK security state? And most of these people will just turn around and shriek. Or you'll get coordinated campaigns that come out of somewhere with a bunch of suspicious accounts. But nobody answers the question of, it's Montgomery Toms, isn't it?
Yes, that was the individual.
Mr. Montgomery Toms, why are you funded by the Scientologist John Mappin? And why, the person basically who was in charge of Turning Point UK for a long time, he's quoted as one of the people behind Candace Owens, and these people are if they're not nuts, they're pretending to be nuts.
Mr. George Farmer as well of Parler.
Go out and look at what John Mappin says on the internet. It is absolutely insane. He does talk about astral projection, Scientology, all of these different things. And yet he is here as a money man, giving quote-unquote based world the money it needs to, well, not exist, but go out, sit at a table like Charlie Kirk for half an hour and get Performance of the Arrested, which seems to be the business model. But it's the same people, the same organisations, Turning Point UK, over and over again, pushing new quote-unquote based faces with exactly the same patronage. And if you know who the people are, you can just watch the money move about. And I know we come across as cantankerous, but we find this as Britain rots, basically. We find it quite disgusting that people would engage in this while their country is in such awfully steep decline. And while they claim that they are doing something, this is them doing something about it. No, Montgomery Toms, taking money from a Scientologist to get arrested is not doing something. And that's why we are so forceful about the fact that this patronage network needs to be talked about and dismantled, because without it, without pointing at people and going, you there, you're taking dirty money, you dirty bastard, without that, nothing can ever move forward, because you'll constantly just be smothered by these people who are revolting, frankly.
I mean, let's be frank, really. The time whereby we will have patronage for what we believe to be the right or our own organised minority beyond left and right or whatever else, it'll be a fluke. It'll be a lottery win. It'll require someone who's insanely rich to turn round and give money to someone for basically almost no reason beyond the fact that they believe we can do it. Otherwise, we need to go with something like Alex Masters has been talking about for years of build an industry. Become business competent. And I think this is something that internally has caused a lot of frustration between even people we have known. That it's very difficult to draw the line between what do you do that's politically effective and what do you do that's commercially effective. Because these things are sometimes never intertwined and almost at certain times complete contradictory opposites.
Well, they're deliberately put at odds in many cases because of the way our society's been set up by those who manage it.
So it would behoove a lot of people, I think, who believe they are involved in politics to consider themselves to be involved in business and leave the politics maybe to other people. I think a lot of consternation and problems people have with one another would be solved if it became quite clear that people maybe to some extent just put their hands up and said, sorry, I'm not a political pundit, I'm just a commentator.
Yeah, to have success, we have to have effectively an apolitical wing, like many leftists do. There are a lot of people who assist the left to an immense degree who are outwardly apolitical.
Yeah, where's our union of bus drivers?
Yeah, who would consider themselves economically interested rather than politically interested.
How about, in any respect, working with the left? Do you guys see that as a complete no-go? I ask this, of course, as a man of the sensible centre-left.
People should be doing that already,
yes.
But we shouldn't be discussing it.
Yeah, it should. That should have happened. Not only should it happen, it should have happened yesterday.
You should be running around women's liberation, you know, whatever movements, telling them the fact that the reason why you believe in these ideas is not because you were liberated and life got better. It's a psychological response that has been mediated upon people for the best part of a century because the economic conditions where you could have a single income household don't exist anymore.
Well, there's another thing in that. Just go out and talk to people. You'll find friends. I know a lot of people don't like this being talked about, but there are genuinely people within the Islamic community and spheres who are worth talking to.
And I suppose there's another aspect here as well, that everyone wants to have a conversation normally when it comes to doing anything about, well, where's the money going to come from? What we don't have is money, but what we do have is time.
Yes.
We have a lot of time to spend. There's a lot of people out there who could spend 3 or 4 hours less a day on Twitter or doing a stream or whatever else and actually be engaged in the local politics in their area. Maybe it was a point I should have made in the previous sort of thing we were doing before, but I will now anyway. I think the best move we could make as the organised whatever online would be to all unanimously leave the internet in one fell swoop and go deep underground into local politics and don't be political. I mean, is it really easier to make you stop having immigrant HMOs in your community because you run around being a patriot and being based and associating with reform? No. I think if anything, it's going to make it more difficult. Why would you start a protest movement when really what you need is to bureaucratic, you know, some sort of bureaucratic knowledge and read up for it's, years you actually know how to appeal these things?
You want an effective bureaucratic pressure group that looks neutral in what it does. And then you have to be able to get that funded without being torn apart by the political maelstrom that usually engulfs these kind of organisations when they are outwardly political. Because what we want really isn't political. What we want is functional. It is. I think the fact that Britain needs to function and not be awful is apolitical. And we kind of, you know, cheekily declare ourselves the correct position. But it is what most people aren't bothered about political problems. They're bothered about practical problems. And sitting outside of a university trying to have a debate with the students doesn't solve any practical... It doesn't even aim to solve any practical problems.
Practical problems require practical solutions.
Yes.
Not political ones.
What the based faction, in quotes, is extremely bad at offering people is practical solutions. It can't offer them governance in the way that the managerial class can. And that's how they win by default.
Yeah, I'd agree with a lot of that. I think it's important if you're going to get involved in local politics to do it under the rubric of just being independent and local and doing it for your local, like you said, your local church, your local pub, whatever else, and not drenching it in the based flag. You know, this is, I believe, I mean, I won't name any organizations, but these are mistakes I believe have already been made. You know, it shouldn't come wrapped with edge and things like this, because at the end of the day, some of the hard work that will need to be done and so on. See, I feel like everybody wants a quick step magic fix, right? To do it in one or two steps or whatever. But some of the changes will have to be incremental. They have to, you know, it will take time. Problem is that, you see, they're pretty smart, you know, the powers that be. They're already kind of, you know, Labour are literally slashing the number of councils and centralising, you know, local parishes and things into bigger and bigger chunks. They've just centralised the police forces, you know, so they're kind of onto the prospect of this already. And then if you go to your local council, reform already there, of course. Deselecting councillors left, right and centre. So,
I mean, it's already been captured. We had, 5, 8, 10 years of everyone complaining that the Tories cut money from councils, these councils become destitute, and then Labour comes along and conglomerates them all for budgetary reasons. It's almost like it's worked hand in glove.
The problem is working, is genuinely organising outside of that, is not being, you know, you can use certain parts of the process locally, but simply being present and organised financially, in terms of businesses, all of that is not illegal. All of that is very possible, but people think that they have to be a political party. And being a political party is the worst thing you can be. It wraps you up in all kinds of red tape. And really what you can be is an organized institution just by being one, just by linking people together, which is what we've tried to tell people. That, but they look like they've been told something that's, you know, impossible. It's very strange when you tell people that the way to do this is to do it. And it is. Associate with people. If you are somebody of standing, associate with other people of standing and knit yourself into a group of people of standing. It doesn't have to be a political party, but you can use whatever pressure that you can bring to bear for whatever means that you want. But you're right, everybody wants a quick solution. Everyone wants to vote the problem away because they cannot imagine anything else. They can't. Well, they certainly can't imagine doing the hard work. But that's why we've done the stuff with the book. That's why we, you know, used to do. Hopefully one day we'll be able to do again the stuff with the events. But helping, you know, Whifflings launch and that becoming a positive cycle is something that we have done and can be done and other people have done. And that there is a small little kind of volunteer-based business there running because we and others have bothered to do something. And that's the only way these things come about, is by a group of people bothering to do something. Without large patronage, that's all we can really do, is do things for ourselves and each other until we're able to level that up into something else. But most people can't get past the first step of doing things for themselves and each other.
While we're talking about real-life politics, one of the things that I find a little frustrating is that so much of the infrastructure of what it would need to take to actually make genuine change in the country is wrapped up in the Labour Party, all of the labour unions and so on, but they've all been sewn up so long ago. But in an ideal world, you see, this is the problem. In the ideal world, Labour would be on our side. I mean, in the ideal world, that would be the vehicle to actually produce the change that normal people want, as against, you know, the rich and the privileged and the capitalists and so on. But that, I mean, that there's no, you know, the Labour Party is as captured as any other institution at the moment.
Well, as I was going to say, I don't think that change, for better or worse, comes from the Labour Party. It comes from all the different factions behind that use it as a form of ruling legitimacy. Corporate interests, public service interests, these align with the Labour Party because, as we've talked time and time again, essentially, or more so, sorry, from the Blair era onwards, that the Labour Party better integrates with the sort of gears of managerialism. It seems to have an innate understanding of how to make them work better, as opposed to this sort of weird, cold Thatcherite thing that the Tories do, where they just pretend that they can't work with it. And then we do end up with these sort of no-one-gets-what-they-want, worst-of-both-worlds compromises. Who asked for New Britain, Gordon Brown's plan? Did anyone really desperately need different councils and parish councils to be consolidated? No, I don't think they did. Not anyone on the ground, anyway. Mm-hmm. It's more the fact that this makes it easier to engage in a sort of managerial bean counting.
But I guess what I'm trying to refer to is, well, I mean, John Gray in False Dawn calls it the intermediary institution. Right? We were talking about the old working men's clubs or unions used to be this as well, which is basically like a space that is like a buffer or a go-between in between the managerial, the hard managerial state or the soft state, whatever you want, the state which is there, and, you know, being all like and the people, right? There were these spaces and they kind of had, you know, people had each other's backs. It was called an intermediary institution. And I mean, one of the stories of the past 30, 40 years has been the gutting of these, all of these, you know, the managerializing of them, the co-opting of them for this agenda or that agenda. But in a, like, you know, even before you get to political change, we can't even achieve that.
I guess that's actually one of the areas that we can have a large amount of success, I think, is in recreating some of these intermediary organizations.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
There is some movement in this, but it is quite slow going. But if people actually want an idea of what to do to try and get patronage, would be to try and set up things like effectively alternate unions, alternate working men's clubs, things like that are much easier to pitch and much cheaper actually than a political party. And you can declare them out of basically nothing. You could get a small unit on an industrial estate, get a small license in a little shop unit somewhere. And whoosh, whoosh, you have your own little club. whoosh, whoosh, you have your own, you know, get 100 people to sign up, whoosh, whoosh, your union. Set up an NGO, even things like that. And it is, you're right, the complete destruction of the intermediary organizations, I think, is one of the weaknesses currently of managerialism. Because people, like, who do you know who's an enthusiastic union man these days? I haven't met anybody in my entire life who is an enthusiastic member of a union. I have never, ever met anybody. I've met people who are quite, you know, out-and-out socialists, but none of them talk about their union proudly. The unions are gone. They're completely gone. They are beyond gone as a concept. And so, yeah, the problem is recreating intermediary organizations is hard. It's difficult. It's possible, but
in the Victorian era, there were friendly societies as well. I mean, this is the spirit of the spirit of the country in a way. Well, British people have always been kind of get up and do it and make some, like, and it's our thing. But obviously, the modern world, the managerial state doesn't like that sort of stuff. And it works because it always worries about the rival castle it can destroy. But, and you know, ideally, these are the sorts of things I think are more realistic to achieve in the short term.
So I can't believe the names escape me. What was the fictional town you used as a model years ago?
It's Trumpton.
Trumpton.
Which people found very confusing because of Trump.
What you want is the people of Trumpton. And that's it. It's just an organization, the people of Trumpton. And that's it.
Yeah.
There's no political colouring, no partisan colouring. It doesn't even make itself look like it's manifesting its will in the world in any sort of imperialist sense. It is just the interests of the local people. And it's trying, I think, to take away... I mean, if anything, some of the problem is all these big intermediary groups, there's so many of them you have to bring on board as stakeholders nowadays.
And all of them are very centrally run. They're not even intermediary groups
anymore.
They're
too big to fail.
Yeah, they're functionary groups. They've become...
They've become managerial. They've become themselves managerial. That's one of the issues. In the interest of time, folks, let's put a bow on this one. We talked about patronage. We talked a little bit about what we might be thinking of. You know, why not set up think big. You could set up a little, like, pool club or something. I don't know, hall.
Do you know what? this was the last thing I was going to say, actually. Before you go and try and run a political party, see if you can get 6 people to start a darts team first. Because when you try and do that, and you've got to communicate with the landlord, and you've got to work out the schedule, and then you've got to work out with the other teams and the
get people to turn up.
It's a bloody nightmare. Do that first before you start your political party. Any base sprogs listening?
All right. And where can people find you guys again?
People can find us on the Scrum Monkey YouTube channel,
on the Anti-Politics Substack, or you can buy book. We have book. Let me. We'll get it where it's a bit more visible. There, you can actually read the title there. Anti-Politics Volume 1, The Elite, available on Withlings.
There we go.
Who is an independent publisher, and none of their money goes to starving children in Africa. We can guarantee it.
Yes.
And I will just remind people: pick up a course at the Academic Agency, buy it now, etc. And get out. Get out there and go and play darts and pool. Go to the pub.
That's the one.
If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the Academic Agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just 3 of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.